Podmoth.
If you're easily offended, this show may not be for you.
But if you're into that weird fun sh**, you've come to the right place.
You've been warned.
Are you there?
I'm Chris. I'm the believer.
I'm Cody. I'm the skeptic. Okay, stories. Let's get into it.
Hello, and welcome to BSP, Believer Skeptic Podcast.
It's a podcast where two idiots debate weird phenomena.
I'm Chris, I'm the believer.
I'm Cody, I'm the skeptic.
And if this is your first time listening to us, we're an LGBTQ paranormal comedy podcast and proud members of the Podmoth Network. And this is a full episode.
Yay! And as Chris pulls hair off the microphone.
Cat fur.
Oh, cat fur off the microphone. Yeah, so, and also this is our Thanksgiving special.
Very early Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
But for good reason, because we have a live show coming up on November 12th. So that'll be our next episode. And then after that is after Thanksgiving. So we thought we'd do it early. So
yeah. And didn't we release our Thanksgiving episode like a couple days after Thanksgiving?
I can't remember.
So this is like doing an A-B test. Yeah. Like we're going to test if y'all like it better before or after Thanksgiving.
So with that, should we tell them what the topic is?
Should we keep talking about A-B testing?
Yeah. It's
very fascinating.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If anyone guessed from the minisode, we'll send you stickers.
It was there, definitely.
It was there, but it was tough. It was tough. Yeah. So do you want to share the episode?
So yeah, I mean, as you know, we are big proponents for social justice in any sense and want to always give minorities or people of less, whatever you want to call it.
I say like people who've been trampled.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Mistreated.
Yes.
Yes. So anyways, so with that, of course, we are doing the topic is the indigenous people, but more specifically we are doing Legends of the Indigenous People of Alaska, because we've never really touched that state.
No, and this is super interesting.
There's so much information, and yeah, there's a lot.
There's a lot out there, and I think it was just a really fun idea, and that's why I think, like, because we've done a couple different Native American topics or episodes, and I just love going up to the Northwest and seeing what they're up to up there.
Yeah, especially, yeah, because Alaska's in, like, it's almost like its own little country.
Yeah, that's true. It really is. So with that, should we do
drinks? I didn't get a drink, and I had to justify, but I mean, do you want me to go first? Since I'm already talking about it.
Are you being did you pull a Cody?
Yeah, because I couldn't find a drink, at least non-alcoholic anyways, and I definitely didn't have time to learn how to make a baked Alaska, which is that. So
I don't even know what a baked Alaska is. Oh. I assume that it's baked.
And it has meringue and all this other stuff.
But it's not ice cream?
It has ice cream in
it. Oh, it does? Oh, but, okay. Oh, no.
Even though this is Thanksgiving episode, we're recording it a week before Halloween. So what I decided, I looked up to see what was the most popular Halloween candy in Alaska.
Oh, that's cool. Like a little mix.
And it happens to be Sour Patch Kids. So that's what I'm having today.
You know what? That's actually interesting. I like that.
Well, I looked for food and all that, but like most of the food was obviously like seafood or like stuff that I couldn't do like today, you know?
You come in with like a blue crab platter.
Yeah, no.
And I'm just sitting here like, oh, shit. And I have my Circle K. Oh, he's tearing it up with his teeth. Get it.
All right. So I have Sour Patch Kids.
Yeah. And so I actually went to the store and I was going to buy some Alaskan Amber, which is actually one of my favorite beers. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't find any. So I ended up going through the wine and I found a wine called Arrow Creek. Mm. And I know that up in Alaska that the indigenous people, you know, this was back thousands of years ago, hundreds, you know, hunted using arrows, and you find arrowheads. And so it just seemed neat. Now, fun fact, there was a different one, this exact same brand and kind, and it was much prettier. Mm-hmm. And so my brother-in-law was, well, get the pretty one. And I was like, no, it's got a cork, and I can't do those. The ugly one had a screw top, so they're like, the ugly one you get, so that's what I have.
My other, because I did get two things, but the other one I didn't pull out, but I had bought Klondike bars.
Oh, did you?
Which, I mean, technically Klondike is Canadian, but they had to pass through Alaska for the gold rush, you know?
Oh, so that's very cool.
It's related.
Yeah, I think that would have worked, but I think Sour Patch Kids is much more interesting. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so he's eating. Well, while I open my screw top, do you want to get into some... I'm trying to think what you're going to talk about, like history of the people or history of lore. So get to it.
Well, the indigenous people of Alaska include Inupia, Yupik, Aleut, Iyak, Tlingit, Haida, Tsimisian, Eskimo, and many, many more.
Yeah.
And they're all pretty difficult to pronounce for the most part.
In one of my stories, I make a note of this because it is insane.
Some of the words are, and it's hard to find pronunciations online. That was the other thing I was having a hard time finding.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it was tough. It was tough. I ended up having to do some like substitutions.
Yeah. Alaska Natives are federally recognized and belong to 13 Alaska Native regional corporations. As you can well guess, the ancestors of the indigenous people of Alaska migrated to the area thousands of years ago. What I found interesting is that some of the original descendants of indigenous people, only settled in the northern part of North America, and as a result, don't have any close relations to indigenous people of South America at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Many of the indigenous people of Alaska descended from Asia via the Bering Land Bridge, mm-hmm. while others traveled by sea. I'm not too sure of the current numbers, but in 2013, it was said that there were about 120,000 indigenous Alaskans living in the state, making up over 15% of the whole state population.
15? Wow.
Yeah. So apparently, Russian colonizers were the first to make contact with Alaska natives, specifically the Aleut, sometime in the 1700s.
And I'm sure it went well.
Yeah. The Russians brought Christian religion to the indigenous people and forced many to fish and hunt for them rather than do it themselves.
Oh my God.
Eventually forcing some indigenous tribes into slavery.
Oh my God.
After many years of mistreatment, the Aleut tribes revolted against the Russians, and in turn, the Russians killed many of the native people. Not only that, they destroyed a lot of their equipment, which left them with very little, if anything, to be able to survive. Because mm-hmm. at this time, they're surviving on like fishing and fur trading and all that good stuff, you know. With that, the Aleut tribes were also hit with a number of diseases, killing off about 80% of the population. So,
80? Holy shit. So there was 105,000 left. So that meant back then, mm-hmm. there were, like, it was just hugely populated. Yeah. Wow.
Fast forward about 100 years. In the 1800s, the United States started to catch word that Alaska had a lot of natural resources, but gold is what they were really interested in. As a result, the U.S. bought Alaska from the Russians. The U.S. did not take care, didn't really care about the indigenous people or their wishes, and considered their land to be free to whatever white settlers came along with no regards to native people living there.
Mm-hmm.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
When the U.S. began imposing segregation, they did so as well in Alaska, separating Alaska natives from their white counterparts.
God.
In 1915, Alaska Natives were given the right to vote under the condition that they give up their cultural customs and traditions.
What the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
I did not even know that was a thing.
Yep.
So basically, if you pretend to be white, you can vote.
Yep.
Okay.
Eventually, after a lengthy battle, segregation in Alaska was ended by law in 1945. And 15 years later, the state would become the 48th state of the United... 48th state? Or
49th?
49th. State of the United States. I don't remember if I typed
the 12th? That weren't they part of the Civil War?
Whatever. Yes, Alaska is the 49th state. 8th is close to 9, so I hit the wrong key.
889.
In 1971, U.S. Congress passed ANCSA, or Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. The act settled a number of land and financial claims for land and resources lost to colonizers. As a result of this, the previously mentioned 13 Alaska Native regional corporations were established to assist in processing the claims that fell under the newly established act. Additionally, when this act was established, reservations were done away with in Alaska. Which leads me to my next point. The indigenous people of Alaska are in some cases treated as a separate entity from other Native American tribes and people in the United States.
Interesting.
For example, tribal governments in Alaska are unable to collect business transaction taxes on tribal land, while other Native American tribes can, as we know. The year following ANSCA, Alaska Natives were granted the right to harvest marine life. But aside from this right, the indigenous people of Alaska do not have treaties with the U.S. that will or can protect other rights for them.
Wow.
Today, many indigenous people of Alaska live in small villages or more remote areas of the state, although the number of people who live in more urban areas continues to rise. From the information I provided today, you can see that the indigenous people of Alaska suffered under the thumb of colonizers like most other indigenous people. It is a sad reality, and in many, many cases, reparations have not been made and may never be made. This is the unfortunately and shady-ass history of the United States that they don't want you to learn in school.
Mm-hmm.
And anyhow, there you have it. Some very short and definitely not complete history of the indigenous people of Alaska.
Oh my gosh. I felt like I just got a degree that I something I knew nothing about before. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I just can't believe they made them basically lose their heritage and their history and, just to be able to vote.
And then made them into slaves.
Yeah, made them into slaves. Ugh. So. Well, change gears just a little bit, and we're going to get into some lore mm-hmm. from the Alaska Native American tribes. I couldn't think of the words, like communities. And I've got a couple really cool ones here. Mm-hmm. The first one is a little more standard,
okay.
And then the second one is weird, and so I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm going to be talking first about the Adlit, and it's okay. pronounced, it's spelled A-D-L-E-T, mm-hmm. but it looks like it's pronounced Adlit, actually.
Okay.
So this is an Inuit folklore, and it's actually considered to be the Arctic counterpoint of the werewolf. And for good reason, although they are not shapeshifters and the moon has no effect on them, their physical appearance is enough to make anyone believe that they're one and the same. So the Adlit very much resembles the classic werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
Now, many of the accounts of this murderous race of humanoids have described them as having a more human upper half and then a fully canine lower half. But then there are others that say that they're pretty much exactly werewolves, except they're red. They're said to have red fur. What all the descriptions have in common is the details of the monstrosity. They possess a mouthful of razor-sharp teeth, a pronounced canine snout, pointed ears, piercing eyes, and a long wolf-like tail. Now, they are merciless killers. They stalk their prey in packs, and that's what I thought was really cool.
They're pack animals?
Yeah, they're pack animals. And so unlike the werewolves and those where you see they're just kind of on their own, Adlits run together through the wilderness of the northernmost regions of America, so Alaska. And they will actually feed on anything in desperation because it can get harsh up there, but they prefer to drink the warm blood of a newly slain human.
Okay.
Yeah, it also eats the flesh with an equal amount of relish. And when I first read that, I thought of the condiment.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, wait, no. It means that they love to eat it. And I was like, why relish? Yeah,
and mustard and ketchup.
Yeah. I really was like, are pickles like a thing up there? But now they actually, it says they may be feral and of limited intelligence, mm-hmm. but very cunning. So then again, unlike, you know, werewolves that are humans turning, these are actually like more like a cryptid. Now, they do have some supernatural abilities. They have, you know, enhanced strength, agility, mm-hmm. endurance, and speed. Their senses are extremely acute. They can see in the dark. They can smell a fresh human corpse from a mile away. So they're like the shark werewolf of the land.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to their physical abilities, they're also immune to conventional forms of energy.
Yeah.
They actually can heal wounds that are not caused by silver. Very quickly. Yeah, so it's really interesting. So the origin story for this, I wanted to talk about this. It's often referred to as the girl and the dogs, and you'll see why. Okay, first, these names. I can't. So I'm going to do some substitutions after trying the first time. So a woman named Niviara Siang, she's the girl. She lived with her father, Sever Kwong. But she wouldn't marry anyone, and hence she was also called Uinugamusisutitong, which means she who wouldn't take a husband. After rejecting all of her suitors, she ended up marrying a dog named Urikong with white and red spots.
I don't blame her. Animals are much more loyal. genuine, trustworthy.
I was about to even be like, so a man isn't good enough for her.
Minus the sex, yes.
Well, this is plus the sex.
Ew,
so,
gross.
Yeah. So not only does she marry this dog, he knocks her up.
Gross.
Now, there are some accounts that say he raped her, and that's actually important for debunk. Mm-hmm. But I don't actually know the real one way or another, but she got pregnant. Mm-hmm. Well, because it was a dog that knocked her up, she didn't have a baby. She had a litter. So she had 10 children.
Oh, my God.
Now, of their 10 children, 5 were dogs, and the others were adlit with dogs' bodies, you mm-hmm. know, like I just described before. Now, since so what I'm calling him now is the dog is called Dog. The girl is Daughter, and then the father of her is Dad.
Okay.
So that's what I'm calling from now on. So since Dog would not go hunting and the children were very hungry, it fell onto Dad to provide for the noisy household. At last, he put them into a boat and carried them off to a small island, telling Dog to come and get meat daily. So the daughter would hang a pair of boots around his neck to carry the meat, and he would swim it ashore. Now, this worked for a while, but one day Dad, instead of giving him meat, put a bunch of stones in the boots.
Oh, and drowned.
And Dog drowns. In revenge, on a boat trip, the daughter sends the young dogs over to gnaw off her father's feet and hands. So all of his hands and feet are gone. He, in return, kicks her overboard, but she's hanging on to something called a gunwale. I didn't look it up. While she's hanging on, he cuts off her fingers. So now we have hands and footless, and she's all having no fingers. Now, the story doesn't say how, but somehow they both survive. And I don't want to look it up because it's actually funnier, because what happened then was, since Daughter is so scared now that her father might kill the adlit, mm-hmm. she sent them inland. And some of them she sent across the ocean in a makeshift boat. And those are the ones, when they arrived in Europe, and they become Europe's ancestors or werewolves. Now, that is actually the end of the story, but I think mm-hmm. it's so much funnier not to understand how they survived, because what I'm picturing is she's scared of her dad killing all the adlits. Mm-hmm. Well, like, let's do a comparison. Adlits, supernatural werewolves, crazy sharp teeth, cunning, can't be killed, all this stuff. And then the dad who she's scared of is dude with no hands or feet. And I'm like, who's going to win in this battle? But I guess you have to do what it takes to protect your children.
Weird.
And that is the adlit.
That's a random ass story.
I love it.
Mm. Well, for my first story, I'm talking about a creature that comes from the, as well, Inuit tribe of Alaska mm-hmm. called the Kalupalik.
Kalupalik.
The okay. Kalupalik is also known, or has also been called, the Kalupalit, or Leet, Kalupalit. The creature is said to inhabit the freezing lands of Alaska, Canada, and Greenland. The Kalupalik is described as a sea-dwelling creature that is said to be half-human and half-sea monster that targets children.
Half-human? So it's like a Loch Ness monster that's like, hi, I've got a human torso.
It's like an evil mermaid of sorts.
Oh, I see.
Some have claimed that the creature resembles a mermaid. It is said to have dark hair, long fingernails, and green, slimy skin. Some tellings of the legend state that the Kalupalik also has fins coming out of its head, back, and torso, and has webbed hands and feet. Additionally, the Kalupalik is said to reek of sulfur.
Ew. Oh my God, it's just like last week where it's just farts all over the place.
Like,
okay.
Boiled eggs.
Yeah.
The Kalupalik is said to lure unsuspecting children into the icy waters below. Someone will know a Kalupalik is near when they hear the eerie, distant humming coming from below the ocean waters underneath.
So not when they smell farts and rotten eggs,
yeah.
but the sound. Okay.
And then they'll leap out from underneath, then sinking its sharp claws into them, taking them under the water, never to be seen again.
Wow.
Aside from their siren song, some say that the water will become choppy or steamy when a Kalupalik is near.
Steamy.
But I was thinking, if somebody moves and if it's like a warm-blooded thing, that's going to create that anyway.
Oh, that is true. It would. Yeah. It would create that.
Yeah. Some have said that if a child is lured in by its voice, the Kalupalik will tap its long nails on the ice in hopes of getting the kid to follow them.
Ooh,
that's creepy.
That is super creepy.
If that doesn't work, the Kalupalik is said to kidnap any kids playing by the edge of the ice and then take them away again. Once kidnapped, it is said that the Kalupalik will keep the child in their lair forever. In some stories, it is said that the child that has been taken would get a very brief look at the face of the creature, which was said to resemble the face of a woman, but again, was green and bloated from the rot of living in the depths below.
Oh my gosh.
You see, the Kalupalik is said to only eat certain children. With the children that are taken into the lair, it has been said that the Kalupalik will drain these children of their youthful energy so the monster can remain forever young.
Wow.
Yeah.
So which are the certain children, though, that it prefers?
They didn't say specifically. I'm assuming it's probably going to be bad kids, of course.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I already in my head was like, yeah. I think I know the debunk for this story. Yeah.
Some stories have stated that the Kalupalik can also travel by land and will hunt for children who have become lost in snowstorms. The legend of the Kalupalik has been around for thousands of years, being passed down by many indigenous elders. Some of those have alleged to have seen the creature say that the Kalupalik can only be seen for a short time before they suddenly disappear. Some have said that the Kalupalik are actually a group of pale women who kidnap children to raise as their own when they themselves could not have any. When these children grow up, the females carry on the tradition and become Kalupalik themselves.
Oh, interesting. How do they get the features and stuff?
That I don't know. That it just gave me that information.
Oh my god, they have like a creepy ass surgery or something, like instead of a quinceañera,
yeah,
they have a Kalupalik era.
Yeah. The male children of the other, on the other hand, will either be returned to their original parents, killed, or become hunters and protectors for their new quote mothers. You know?
Oh my, this is a movie like waiting to be made.
There's one short story I was able to find in it. A grandmother lived in a hut along with her grandson. The two had no other family and lived in poverty. Knowing that they were poor, some of the locals would be sympathetic and would bring them food to eat from their hunts. Despite that, the boy would cry from hunger, which would make his grandmother angry. When the boy wouldn't stop crying, in her anger, the grandmother asked the Kalupalik to take the boy away.
Oh my god.
The grandmother...
Rude?
Yeah, the grandmother's call was answered, but not long after, she started to regret her decision and then told a close neighbor what had occurred. The neighbor and his wife agreed to help the grandmother find her grandson. By this time of the year, the ice had begun to thaw a little, and when the tide rose, the grandson would sit on the shore. Anyone who saw him noticed that he had a long piece of seaweed tied to him that was being held at the other end by a Kalupalik. As the neighbor tried to approach the boy, he called out, and when he did, he was pulled back into the water.
Ooh!
Sometime later, they saw the boy again, and this time approached him carefully, but the boy still noticed them and again called out, only to be pulled away again. Despite
Man,
that,
be quiet!
Yeah.
I want him to be saved.
Despite that, they waited again for the boy. When he next appeared, the neighbor grabbed the boy before he could be pulled back underwater. The boy was not returned to the grandmother, but was rather raised by the man and his wife to become a great hunter.
Oh, good for them.
And there you have it, the legends or legends of the Kalupalik.
Well, so how do the neighbors explain this new child that suddenly came to live with them to the grandmother?
Like a grown child.
A grown child that's like the exact same age.
They put a scalp on it.
Oh, good reference to the minisode. Yeah. That was so good.
Since apparently putting somebody else's scalp on changes your complete appearance.
Yes, yeah. And it's completely foolproof.
Yeah.
Yes, I think that's what they did. Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
Witchcraft. The occult. Extremist beliefs. Murder. Tune in to Rogue Darkness each week and join your host Raven as I uncover horrific crimes committed under the misconceptions and misunderstandings of witchcraft and other beliefs. I'll cover a plethora of crimes involving ritualistic killings to cult persuasion and everything in between. There's always three sides to a story. Side A, side B, and then the truth. Let's uncover the truth together and explore the darkness of mankind, one crime at a time. Available wherever you get your podcast fix, simply by searching Rogue Darkness.
All right, so for my next story, yeah, this is really fun. I am going to be talking about the Kushtaka, or the Otter People. So that's OTTER, as opposed to, I don't even
otter,
know.
Otter, like ODDER?
Is that a word?
More odd.
Oh, I would say, oh, otter. Oh, you're right. There you go. I was like, my
otter,
brain.
Otter, not odder.
Odd, yeah, otter, not odder. Exactly. Okay. So Alaska has some absolutely incredible animals.
Yes.
But there is a more adorable... Is there a more adorable animal than an otter? No, you probably can't imagine that sea otters could ever be connected with a creepy legend, but the Tlingit people have a legend about the playful creatures that will send chills down your spine. The coastal Tlingit people, just for a sentence of history, they live in Alaska and Canada and have a known history going back at least 10,000 years.
Yep.
Like, that's so cool. Now, the Tlingit, there you go, believe that some otters are actually shapeshifters that can look like men. And these creatures can often have an evil purpose.
Otters, like in the gay community?
As in the gay, yes. Otters often
they
do.
They look like men. Okay, yes.
They can have an evil purpose.
Yes.
Okay, yes. Now, these otters, these shape-shifting otters, are called Kushtaka. And the legend goes like this. As you're walking through your village, or you're hunting in woods, or fishing in the sea, a man or group of men may approach you. Now, they may look just like kinsmen, and you don't have a clue that they're really the Kushtaka. Now, in some cases, these malevolent creatures appear when you're lost or injured and claim that they intend to rescue you. Sometimes, I love this.
And they're cute, so you're like...
Well, right now they're men, so they shapeshift into men. So they have two forms, but you're right. This second part is...
If it's an otter... I mean, I'd be a little freaked out that an otter's talking to me, but they're cute, so they would be enamored by them.
And that's exactly what can happen.
Like Emmett,
I love it.
Emmett Otter.
I was just going to say, you would be sucked in because you love Emmett Otter.
Yes.
So sometimes they actually assume the form of the otter to lure you. In some accounts, your Kushtaka is able...
If they start singing some Jim Henson music, then I'd be...
You'd be like, take me and eat my soul, because that's what they do. So in some accounts, they can actually assume the form of any species of otter.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like they can actually assume the form of the cutest one to really lure you in. Emmett Otter for Chris. So the very cuteness of otters is what can make them so dangerous, according to the Tlingit people.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're so drawn to their playful nature, it's easy to miss the fact that these shapeshifters really want to consume our souls and condemn us to spend eternity wandering the frozen tundra. So see, they lead you deeper into the wilderness, and they either tear you to pieces... Or they turn you into another Kushtaka, which in their culture, they believe that prevents your soul from being able to reincarnate. So once you become one, I guess you're not a human anymore. You can't reincarnate. You die and you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like the Odlit, they run in packs as well, and groups of them are especially dangerous. They might lure you toward them by being super cute, tee-hee, or making noises that sound like women or children in distress. But once they see you coming, you will never escape.
Mm.
Now, luckily, there is a safeguard against Kushtaka capture. Alaska's second cutest animal is one that's plentiful around the regions.
Bears?
Dogs.
Oh.
Now, cute.
Bears can be cute.
You're totally right. And baby bears are super cute. But the Kushtaka are supposedly terrified of dogs. And luckily, Alaska has plenty of these, of the... furry, fearsome sled dogs to keep its villages safe from harm.
So like Alaskan Malamutes or, you know, what are the other one?
Huskies. Yeah, like those can protect you from the Kushtaka. A dog's bark will make the Kushtaka transform back into its main otter-like form. Dog bones can also be used to defend against the Kushtaka. The same can be said for copper. Some stories also claim that the Kushtaka shy away from fire, but also... TT, a urine is actually said to be a potent way to ward
detractor?
Off. Yeah, detractor.
Which is weird because, like, I've hunted when I was younger. And I mean, for elk and deer, but you would use synthesized urine to attract them.
Yep.
That's interesting.
So for this one, if anyone, just to give a word of advice, then if anyone sees a Kushtaka, no, whip it out and start peeing.
Pee on it.
So it's like a jellyfish of the north. So as far as encounters go, Thomas Bay, Alaska has been home to so many Kushtaka tales that it has acquired a second name, Devil's Country. Now, some of these encounters do not specifically mention the Kushtaka lore, but the creatures in Devil's County are sometimes said to be described as about 4 feet tall or long, you know, not looking human and having claws. These encounters began in 1900 with Harry Culp. Culp and three prospectors allegedly encountered unknown creatures at a crescent moon-shaped lake. In 1925, a fur trapper in the area noticed his dog had gone missing. He went into the wilderness to search for it and was never heard from again. There were also several other purported sightings of the Kushtaka that began with a witness thinking that they were looking at a regular old river otter frolicking in the water, mm-hmm. and then the otter stands up on its hind legs and starts talking to the person, just like Emmett Otter.
We're happy now than ever before. If oh my God, if he started singing that song, I would die.
You would go, and you would, literally. So yeah, and so that is a brief but interesting whatever
Kushtaka
encounter with the Kushtaka.
Mufasa
Kushtaka otter.
That's weird.
I love it.
Random.
Yep, I actually had a whole different story planned,
mm-hmm.
But then I stumbled across this, and I was like, oh, I've got to scrap what I was doing, and let's talk about this, because this is far better.
Well, for my second story, I'm going to talk about the little people of Alaska.
Hey!
There are many and many indigenous stories about the little people. So my information is not specific to one tribe, just because all of them have...
Like so, their version of...
I won't say all of them, but a lot of them have their version of little
of the
people.
Littles. Okay.
So it just has kind of an amalgamation of their descriptors altogether.
Ooh, good word.
According to my research, the Inuit and Yupik people of Alaska have been telling tales of little people for thousands of years, that they live out in the cold extremities, like the colder regions of Alaska. Not that it's not all cold, but even yeah. more cold. You know?
The harshest.
Arctic, you know. These creatures go by many different names. Some of the most common ones I found are Inukin, Irchinhak, and many more, but those are probably the easiest two that I could pronounce.
So, say some of the others.
Yeah, you know, no, thank you. Of course, each tribe describes the little people a little bit differently, but generally they are said to be anywhere from 1 to 3 feet tall, dressed in animal skins, having a pointed head, pointy elf-like ears, dark-colored skin, and very dark eyes.
Oh, wow.
These little people are said to live in the, as I said, in the Arctic, in the caves, mountains, and even underground, preferring to stay hidden during the daytime. They are said to be strong, fast, and pretty smart creatures who are very good at hunting using the bow and arrow. These creatures are said to be tricksters in that they are known to be mischievous, bad-tempered, mean, and seem to enjoy tormenting people. Sometimes they do something as minimal as stealing fresh kills from hunters, but have also been said to abduct women and children, whisking them off never to be seen again.
Wow.
Some have said that the little people have supernatural abilities such as shape-shifting, invisibility, and telepathic confusion, meaning that they have the power to confuse people by playing mind tricks. You know?
Wow. Okay.
Although tricksters, there are some cases in which the little people have been deemed helpful. They have been known to direct lost hunters or children back to their homes, or even have even helped people get their vehicles unstuck in the snow.
Oh, okay.
In some legends, they say that if you catch one of these little people, they will give you a gift. It didn't say what the gift was, but a gift nonetheless. So I guess how they act.
Are they hot?
3 to 4 feet. I mean, they probably could be.
Yeah.
So I guess how they act just depends on the day you catch them on, you know, just like any other person, I guess.
Yeah, wow.
I was able to find one story of an encounter with little people.
Oh.
One certain man's email, which he had intended to go out to a family member, somehow he, I guess, replied all because it made its way onto the internet around 2008.
Oh, that's funny.
In the email, the man said he was out bird hunting about 3 hours away from his town or village. After a full day of hunting, he was about to go home when he decided to take a look in one area that he hadn't been to yet. When he went there, he discovered a little boy all alone in the middle of a marsh. The man recognized the boy as one of the children from his village and asked him if there was anyone with him and how he had gotten there and so on. The boy was very scared and crying and could only reply to every question with, "I don't know." The man said the boy was disoriented, dazed, confused, and scared. He also said the boy had no concept of time, but did not appear to be tired, nor was he hungry or thirsty. The fact that the boy was still alive was in a sense miraculous.
Yeah.
Because the area he found him in was said to be frequented by large tundra brown bears. The man did not...
But they're super cute, so...
Oh, yeah. not when they're like 400 or 500 pounds. The man did take notice that there were no footprints leading to the boy, which to him indicated that no one had walked into the area. He had then decided to take the boy back into town. Upon returning home, the man left his radio on in case the missing boy was reported, which it wasn't. The boy stayed the night with the man, and after speaking with the boy in the morning, it was found that there were missing gaps in his timeline. The boy said he was taken to these mountains, which are often associated with little people, where he was questioned by the little people. He then said he encountered a little girl who told him she had been abducted some 40 plus years ago, asking for his help.
Oh.
It was then that the little people decided to release the little boy. And the next thing he knew, he woke up only to encounter the man merely a few minutes later. So he lost all that sense of time.
Oh my God.
And doesn't know how or where anything happened. So
I'm glad. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I'm glad they released him.
Yeah, but not the 40-year-old.
Yeah.
Dang.
So was this one boy's real encounter or just a made up story? We may never know. And there you have a little bit about the little people of the indigenous Alaska legends.
Wow. That is fascinating.
Yeah.
What, that was cool. Okay. Those are some of the four most different stories mm-hmm. we've had. And absolutely. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
And there's so much more too, because we actually thought about at some point doing just an Alaskan mm-hmm. folklore hauntings well, or something.
There's the Alaskan Triangle, which they say is even worse than Bermuda.
Yeah, that's true. So we should, that may be coming at you. So we're on to believer skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So my debunk, the adlet. Do adlets actually exist? Personally, I don't think so. So what is the legend? Well, I actually found a really, really interesting comment on this as mm-hmm. I was doing all my research. The comment suggests that the adlet is actually an allegory. And to explain, I'm going to just recap the story of the adlet with quote marks that I will put around a word. And you'll know it because I'll stress the word.
Okay.
Chris will see me do the quotes. Y'all will hear me stress it. All right. So an Inuit woman who refuses to marry ends up marrying or being raped by a wolf. She has children from the wolf. Some are human, some are wolf, and some are a mix called the adlet. Her father hates the adlet. One day the mother sends the adlet to bring something to her father, and the mm-hmm. father sends it back across the river with rocks around its neck so the adlet will drown, or so the dog will drown. It does not, and the mother saves it, but tells the adlet, or the wolf, to run away. Now, as you can tell by wolf being in quotations, the wolf is not actually a wolf. It's a stand-in for Europeans / colonizers. So the adlet comes from an Inuit legend that is an allegory for colonialism. You know, the Inuit woman being raped by a wolf. Mm-hmm. You know, she has children from the wolf. Some are human and mm-hmm. some are half. So I thought that was really interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was
never
like,
would have put that together.
No, I hadn't either. And so I read that and I was like, especially because I know like that's a thing, you know, that you focus on. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really cool. Now for the Kushtaka, I mean, everything I read that, you know, this is a cautionary tale for kids not to wander off too far. You know, we've been there. But then I stumbled across something that at first I thought was super promising. But then this person who was supposedly an expert just basically said that this cryptid was a different cryptid. So that it was funny. And the person uh-huh. said, there are very few theories as to what the otter people might be. In my page, I stated that there was strong evidence to support the existence of large bipedal primates in Alaska. If this is the case, then it's possible that the creatures were actually Sasquatch that were infected by an awful disease. And it says terrible diseases can change an animal's behavior and their appearance. So he's like, guys, otter people, that's ridiculous. A much more plausible explanation is that these are Sasquatch with syphilis. Like, that makes much more sense. So I just love that he just substitutes one for another. And I think they're both equally silly. But I thought it was interesting to share. And that is my skeptic. I don't know what you're going to say about this for believer.
Well, this was a little difficult. So
wait, what do you mean?
This, just listen. So my two stories today, although both seem like cautionary tales, uh-huh. I am more inclined to believe the legends of the little people.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
First, let me say something about the Kalupalik. This creature reminds me a lot of La Llorona.
Oh.
In that the legends are a cautionary tale attempting to keep kids away from the water's edge or the ice, which we are told about La Llorona to also keep us away from the rushing bodies of water.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So, about the little people, I think there is something to it, but not in the way you think I might think. If you don't know, Alaska is the largest state in the U.S., covering 573 square miles, equating to 365 million acres.
Damn. Do you know that a lot of people think it's an island?
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard this? Because when you look on a map, sometimes like they put, yeah, and some people actually really think it's an island, which drives me crazy.
Of that acreage, only 160,000 acres have been touched.
Are you kidding?
Yep. So to put it into perspective, that is less than 1/20 of 1% of the whole state, leaving the remainder undiscovered.
Really?
Or untouched. Yeah.
Really, really?
Like parts have been seen with like drones and like that, but not actually been
explored.
Exactly.
Okay, I didn't know that.
There is a reason Alaska has been called the last frontier.
Uh-huh.
I provide these facts only to say that with such... with so much undiscovered country, there are bound to be creatures that have yet to be found that perhaps unintentionally make themselves known. And I guess this could be possibly part of your debunk, but another thought I had is that when you are in the snowstorm and it becomes particularly brutal, you begin to have sensory deprivation, which in turn could lead to fear and perhaps even hallucinations.
Ah.
But that is just my theory. So in summary, there's a lot of Alaska that has yet to be unturned and may never be. So little people, Sasquatch, were-otters, they may still be out there.
Were-otters. Yep. So an adlet has sex with a kushtaka, and you get, we need this to happen.
I think were-otters, there is such a thing.
Oh, is there really?
Not such a thing, but legends of were-otters.
Emmett were-otter.
Oh, that would be amazing.
His Christmas special.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was really cool. That was really cool. That was actually your believer, I think, is really strong, because that thing about so much of the wilderness is unexplored, you know.
Just like the ocean.
Just like the ocean. How do you know what's really out there?
Yep.
X-Files. The
truth is out there.
The truth is out there in Alaska. So do we have a creep of the week, right?
Yeah. So I was inspired by a tweet that Linda Carter sent out on October 1st that said, quote, "I kept hearing about Fat Bear Week and thought it was celebration of body positivity within a gay subculture. It turns out it is about actual bears. Either way, I am here for it," unquote.
Like Wonder Woman?
Yeah.
Really?
Who's actually from here, from Arizona.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I looked into it, and in Katmai National Park, Alaska, they celebrate Fat Bear Week, in which the largest brown bears in the world gorge themselves on salmon in preparation for winter hibernation. Yearly, from September 29th to October 5th, the public is asked to choose the fattest of the fat in online daily voting. The competition started in 2014 with just a few voters, increasing to more than 600,000 votes in 2020.
Wow!
The winner of the 2021 competition is a fatty named Otis, who won with 51,230 votes, and who, as of actually today, is still eating, they said in the article.
Oh my God.
If you want to see a picture of Otis and his transformation, as well as the other competitors, you can go to explore.org.
Oh my God. Okay, yeah. That is seriously awesome.
Yeah.
Go Linda Carter for your support for the LGBT community.
Even though she is wrong.
Even though she is wrong, but go Alaska for having a fat bear competition.
For not fat-shaming animals.
Yeah, not fat-shaming animals,
well,
exactly.
They are preparing for the hibernation, so by the time they come back, they're all skinny, because you actually see pictures of Otis from when they first saw him to like now, and he's gained a lot of weight.
But what's cool is that it's the before and after, mm-hmm. but it's like instead of going from overweight to thin, it's the reverse, and we're applauding it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Dang.
So that's that. That is Alaska thus far.
Yeah. And everyone, before I guess we'll do sign-offs, like, that is our Thanksgiving episode. So.
Yeah.
Do you have anything planned?
No, I'll be traveling between here and Flagstaff. I'll be coming back here, but I have nothing planned as of yet. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because you're doing a show in Flag.
Yeah, I got a gig in Flag, so I'll be living there for a month while we're working remotely as well. So.
That is super cool. Congratulations on that.
Yeah.
Wow. So. Well, I will just be here with my sister.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's all. It's so exciting. They literally expect something, but it's like, and that's all.
Yeah. So with that, thank you everybody for listening. Our next episode will be a live one. So if you're in Tucson, the November 12th, reach out and we'll let you know the details. You can find us on all our podcatchers by just searching our name or BSPodPHX, as well as on all social media. You can find us by searching BSPodPHX. And if you have any stories, we'd like to feature you in our Creeper of the Week, so you can send us an email to bspodphx@gmail.com.
Yeah, and my books, The Gay Teen's Guide to Defeating a Siren, as always, are available on Amazon. There was a whole Thanksgiving chapter that doesn't exist. I just made that up, but that's okay. You can still get them if you want. So, yeah, well, I guess that's everything for Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that we're going to be coming at you with the TuSCon Live episode. And then after that, we're going into the holiday season.
Yep.
So that will be fun. So with that, everyone, have a safe, happy holiday, however you choose to celebrate it. There is no judgment here. If you want to, you know, be a fat bear, you be a fat bear. We support that. And with that, everybody, bye!
See you again next time.